This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin the Monday morning edition. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Aside from some beats that we're going to talk about here to begin the show, how was the weekend, my friend?
It's good. We're getting a little Vegas heat here. Oh. I know. Welcome back, our esteemed producer, Brandon Valesky, who probably faced the brunt of it up in the Windy City.
Yep.
We're after the show, got a nice little lawn mowing session here that we're going to get involved with. Should be about 90, 95 with humidity here. So not the heat of the day, but we'll get there. You're right, though. Over the weekend, two of the most horrific beats ever. We'll get to that coming up. But otherwise, the sun did come up. And, buddy, welcome to the dog days of betting. NBA season done. NHL season, see you later. Time to get with it, man. The bridge to training camp begins today.
Yeah, and that means college football, NFL season, it's not far away now that we wrap up the NBA and the NHL as we did earlier last week. So much to get to here on this Monday. Greg Peterson's going to join us here at the bottom end of this hour, coming up to talk Major League Baseball today. How about our college football win total and maybe a little college baseball World Series? We'll kind of turn the page over to college football with some of those creative measures there. The one and only Will Hill, not the Will Hill on X, but the real Will Hill, will join us at the top of hour number three, break down what he saw last night in the NBA Finals. I do believe Will liked the Thunder last night to cover that seven as they did. John Daigle is going to join us at the bottom half of hour number three to get to his NFL betting guide and what he already likes here before we get into week one and beyond. But without further ado, it is time for today's edition of Highlights and Headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
A great start to Game 7 of the NBA Final. It did not end that way, as we all saw Tyrese Haliburton go out early in that first quarter. And boy, he looked good until he went out. And then from there, Indiana kind of put up a fight, led by one at the break. And you thought, all right, maybe they can do this without Haliburton? Nah. Second half, all OKC. They get it done, cover the number easily, and the under hits as well. Their first NBA title for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And now you see the question, first of many, as I raise my voice there. 103.91 is that final. Get 215.5. Stays well under the total. If you played them, close 6.5 even. So money came in on Indiana. And yet the Haliburton injury. And Jensen, in real time, I thought, boy, if you're sitting on Indiana or the over, it felt like that injury, that was the end of that suspense. Although they made it a little bit suspenseful until that second half.
Indeed. And first, let's recognize the Pacers in and of themselves. What the story of the postseason outside of the Thunder, in their march as the best regular season team en route to an NBA title. So take a bow, Indiana. You made this NBA postseason worth watching in what was otherwise a very dismal NBA postseason all the way around. If you were a common fan, this is about as big of a snooze fest as it could get outside of some Pacers games. So that being said, the Haliburton injury, as catastrophic as it was in the moment, now, Dave, lends you to even larger question marks here for the Pacers this upcoming season, right? So you are potentially without your best player for, if not, most of the season, the entirety of the season. So the Thunder get it done. The third quarter, right? You and I talked about a lot, not only through the conference finals, but also through the NBA finals. What did Oklahoma City do so well? They had a quarter there either in the second half or right out of halftime where they would lock it down defensively.
Yep.
I mean, how many possessions consecutively with turnovers, right, with the Pacers? And, you just felt that this was Oklahoma City's. Once they got through that third quarter, this was a coronation. I still can't believe that Evan Mobley is your defensive player of the year. It makes no sense after watching the defensive efforts from Dort and some of the other entourage there. But all in all, Dave, best team wins the title. Congrats to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, right there with you again. You kind of look at it on the other side. 34-20 is that third quarter that you're alluding to, and the Pacers had that one-point halftime lead. Siakam, indifferent performance, 16 points, 37 minutes. Again, trying to look at the others when Halliburton went out with those quick three threes. So he had nine and only 7 minutes played before the injury. You got nothing from Obi Toppin off the bench. You did get 16 from McConnell again. Mathurin was great with 24 off the bench, but nothing from Shepard, nothing from anybody else from that bench. Nembhard only had six. Turner only was six. Nesmith with three. The N&M boys didn't get it done. OKC, 29 points to the MVP in SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But that 29 points, Jensen, it might have been just just one short of what you needed out there for some boosts. I know that that existed in some places like FanDuel and potentially DraftKings.
Only the free throw merchant could be the one to do it. But hey, if you have 27 shots and you only make eight, and you're very Steph Curry-esque with 12 three-point attempts, you can only make two. I guess the glass half full side would say, hey, the volume was there. But the execution, my God.
Wow.
I was sitting there at the end. I'm like, oh, you know what? We might have a couple opportunities in the final minute or so where he's going to have the ball and you're going to have to take fouls. Hey, just one of those things. And again, beggars can't be choosers here. But I know I've been on side. I would go back to the NHL, right? How many of those puck lines with under a second left did we hit where I'm like, okay. All right, I can't be too mad about this, but like in a moment you're like, really, dude?
29?
Really?
Right, it's
this?
You got a couple 1 point. And by the way, 11 of 12 from the free throw line. Like just one more free throw. 12 of 12, and you get home for those that had the SGA 30 or more points, and Oklahoma City winning. You didn't have to lay the seven. They end up winning by 12, but as you say, every point matters. Coming up just one short, but OKC, Jensen, I guess bigger picture now, are they really building? Do we look at them next year and say, of course they have to go in as the favorite to repeat? We see this traditionally here, but we're impressed because you win the title, but I think maybe we are still waiting for even another level. I wonder if there is another level to this OKC team or if this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, and you kind of look right now, the way too early odds, right? The Thunder under a 3-1, at least betting choice to be the top team yet again here in the upcoming season. To me, that feels like an unbettable number at this point, and we wait to see what the rest of the offseason. Heck, I know we got some news coming up here in just a moment. But I do feel that we are, as much as you and I have talked about the American League and baseball having parity, now with the Halliburton injury, and with Tatum's issues, you know, we'll see what the rehab timeline looks like for the Celtics. What will happen with the Bucks? The Cavaliers have a lot of questions to answer still. The Magic have taken a step forward now, the big Desmond Bain trade. You could make the argument here. You got five, maybe six teams in the East that are going to have a say in potentially coming out of the Eastern Conference.
I'm with you, though. That number feels way too short at plus 240 to go back-to-back. Let's see what if it looks like they're bringing everybody back. Can they keep that roster together? You see the Rockets there at plus 750. That gets us to our next highlight and headline because it's a third betting choice. They've got a new big weapon. He might be getting older, but Kevin Durant has been sent packing. This is one of the teams he desired to be traded to. The organization says, all right, we'll acquiesce. You're going to H-Town. It can't be finalized until the new league year begins on July 6th, but it's a deal that I guess for Phoenix, they felt like it was worth making. So you're going to get Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks is going, and a bunch, as you see, a bunch of second-round picks. You do get you get one 10th overall next year, 2025, a 59th pick overall next year, and then four second-rounders. We like to do this, Jensen. Who won the trade? If you're Houston, you say, look, we had to get this guy because we knew the young guns that we had weren't good enough to get over the hump. That was evidenced in their series against Golden State. Was it a move that they had to make to say that the time in the hourglass is starting to tick away?
If you're the Rockets, and we mentioned them in this past postseason, right, of looking at, they were the two seed and they were upwards of, what, 30-1, 35-1 to win the title. You're like, oh, my goodness gracious, can the number two seed be that far away? But, you know, as much as JBT talked about, as the Oklahoma City Invitational there in the Western Conference, and it's just a coronation process. So now you're trying to look and see if you're Houston, okay, do we match up? And kind of looking now at the current NBA champions, yeah, how does Houston match up here with Durant here? And also a caveat, would you say that LeBron is a bigger ring chaser or is Kevin Durant a bigger ring chaser? The mercenary does it again, finds his way to wiggle out of a bad situation individually, perhaps overall. The sun may be setting on his Phoenix tenure, but certainly the microscope going to be keen and focused on Houston deep in the heart of Texas this year.
Great question. I think you make a good case for either guy. I might lean Durant there a little bit for what he did with Golden State after they had already won a couple to go there. That was kind of interesting. But this to me is Kevin Durant still the same guy? Like, is Kevin Durant now, you know, mid late 30s here, all of a sudden you say, can he still be that difference maker to make him plus 750 to win the NBA title next year? Like, that feels a little steep to get to that curve. So if you're Houston, you got to be excited, because I know you feel like we had this young team, but we needed that one guy. This is the guy that you're banking on now, is Kevin Durant, to be that guy to get you over the finish line there. We'll find out if he is indeed still Kevin Durant. I mean, he's still Kevin Durant, but is he elite Kevin Durant? That I don't know if he's still that version. When we come back, we have a lot to get to, obviously, throughout this hour. And again, we'll talk Major League Baseball here with Greg Peterson coming up at the bottom half. But there are beats, and then there are really bad beats. And I was just, I don't know why I was shocked again at what we saw at the last elevated event on the PGA Tour this year. So we're going to get into all of that with what happened. Is it, hey, go USA, Keegan Bradley, glass half full, or is it Tommy Fleetwood, what happened again? We'll try to figure out that all on the other side when you come back. Just getting started, the Monday edition of VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here. We're going to have Greg Peterson joining us in the next segment to talk some Major League Baseball. But again, there are beats and there are bad beats. And to the victor go the spoils. Captain America, Keegan Bradley, gets it done again, wins the Traveler, second time in 3 years that he's won the elevated event here in Hartford, kind of a home away from home for the Boston guy here.
Yeah.
So we heard it, Jensen Lewis. You heard Captain America. You heard the USA chants. They were prevalent yesterday. And who are they going kind of against? It would be the Englishman, the nice guy, Tommy Fleetwood. And Tommy Fleetwood has a two-shot lead with three to play, three-shot lead, five to play in the betting market. He's upwards of what, about 7-1 coming down the stretch here with a couple to play. It looks like Tommy Fleetwood is finally going to break through and win on American soil for the first time in his life. And then he bogeys 16. He goes into the fairway bunker on 17, makes a great par, and then makes a great drive on 18. Bogey's going to be taken out of play. And somehow he makes bogey on 18. Keegan Bradley sticks his approach to 6 feet, makes birdie, two-shot swing. Captain America, Keegan Bradley, wins this again. Tentacles there with the Ryder Cup, we'll get to all that. How do you look at that, Jensen, as an athlete? Are we looking at that as Tommy Fleetwood absolutely gave this away, or Keegan Bradley took it away?
Well, first of all, I think of George Washington back in the Revolutionary War, and it's almost feeling like Keegan Bradley is reincarnated as our first president of the United States, commander who led our forces in the Revolutionary War over the British. We saw it play out in real time. The British had victory within their grasp. One of the all-time fumbles with the last couple of holes left here for Tommy Fleetwood. It's one of the most significant chokes, I think, from a former athlete watching a current athlete, in so much that you have a three-shot lead to start the day. That evaporates in four holes.
Uh-huh.
You kind of right the ship a little bit, Dave, and gather some momentum. And I can't remember what the number was live, because in the back of my head, it did surface about, hey, we have seen this movie before with Tommy Fleetwood, and particularly when he's in contention in a final round. do I go grab a little bit of Keegan live to win outright? And by the way, Russell Henley, take nothing away from Russell Henley, because he was right there at the end too. This is a three-horse race in every sense. And so that to me was more so, and I want to give credit where it's due, that's more so Keegan Bradley realizing he sensed opportunity, he sensed weakness in Tommy Fleetwood and said, I've got to go for it. I have to apply pressure, because it's more about Tommy will blow this thing more than I need to go and beat him. And I think that's what we saw play out, especially on an 18th hole that Keegan Bradley will never forget.
Tip of the cap to Wes Reynolds, Matt Youmans. I know they had Captain America outright.
Kelly Bidlin.
Bidlin. Mm-hmm. 30-1, 35-1s out there on Keegan Bradley to win this. So again, pays to watch us on By the Books with those guests, and also certainly check out the Long Shots pod each and every week. I will say this too. I felt like there were some things that almost conspired against Tommy Fleetwood without his own knowledge, and that was the weather. Because if you remember, they had to move up the tee times, and they had to, instead of going off in groups of two, they had to go off in groups of three. So I was watching this in real time thinking, boy, it feels like they're running a two-on-one here with the two Americans and Russell Henley and Keegan Bradley against the European. And as all the talk of the Ryder Cup has been just persistent, and wherever Keegan Bradley goes, he's Captain America. So wherever he goes, Tommy Fleetwood, almost like by osmosis, is getting this Ryder Cup vibe, and that had to play into it as the day went on and things got tighter. So, you know, we always talk about this, and we'll get to it with Bethpage Black, because Tommy Fleetwood's going to be there for the Ryder Cup, for Team Europe, of course. Keegan Bradley is the captain of our American squad. That's coming up here in a couple short months. Afterwards, Tommy Fleetwood, and I give him full credit for doing something that Rory McIlroy doesn't do. In defeat, he faced the music. Here's Fleets on his demise.
You know, I'm upset now. I'm gutted. I'm angry. When it calms down, look at the things that I did well. Look at the things that I can learn from. I said yesterday, I haven't been in this position all year. So it's been a while. Felt like I did a lot of good things. But there was things that I, you know, definitely can do better, and I have to do better. So, you know, the most stupid thing to do and the worst thing to do would be make a week like this a hindrance to what you do going forwards. I obviously played great. I put myself in a great position. I was leading the tournament 71 holes. I just want to, you know, make sure that I can put myself in this position as soon as possible again, and try and correct what I did this time. But like I say, right now I would love to, just go and sulk somewhere, and maybe I will do. But there's just no point making it a negative for the future, really, and take the positives and move on.
I led the tournament for 71 holes. You get 72 to play. Maybe I'll just go sulk somewhere. Your heart, like from a humanitarian and athletic perspective, and Jensen, you've seen this, you've seen it certainly in Major League Baseball, where guys come up short on a big stage and there's no hiding. Like he said, maybe I just go sulk somewhere, kind of hide. Like there's no getting away from this, right? So this, we joke about it a lot in golf betting, that Fleets is become embeddable. Now, I will say this. One, that wasn't the only interview he did. He made all of the rounds. I give him full kudos for that, for facing the music and talking about it. Like, you know, I want to just put myself back in this position sooner rather than later, kind of get this thing over the line and finish this once and for all. But I think in our bet that we gave out on Friday in the show, that winner without Tommy Fleetwood was the play to go.
Yep.
Maybe we shouldn't be mad at Tommy Fleetwood. Maybe we should be mad at Scottie Scheffler. Because our handicap was that Tommy wasn't going to win, is that he would come up in second, as he always does, and we thought it would be Scottie Scheffler that runs away. Jensen, have we looked at this through the wrong lens, that really Tommy did exactly what we thought he would do? It was Scheffler that really let us down.
Well, and I kind of said it right after the first, 18 holes, is that I got Scottie Scheffler at plus 330, right?
Yeah.
And after basically first round, he's minus 225 or minus 250 in some places. Like, I mean, this is his to lose. And I give you full kudos too, because we're looking at, all right, are there some placement wagers? Are we playing for second place here? And if we were, your thought process was phenomenal. And here we go into the final round. I'm like, all right, three shot lead. You're a $1.75 favorite to close it out. in the back of my head, I'm like, all right, I got to be ready. Live positions to potentially not only hedge, but also kind of cover myself. And I'm really glad I did. But overall, this is something to file away now moving forward, because the backdrop, as you said, for the Ryder Cup.
Oh,
we are now in position to have a legit conversation. Will Keegan Bradley not only be captain, but will he be a playing member of this team? Because he needed a win to be in the conversation, and rightfully so. In that performance, the way he did it and against who he did it, that is going to be something that sticks in the mind of not only Keegan Bradley, but that group as a whole.
I will say this, listening to Keegan after the round. By the way, USA is minus -1.45 to win at Bethpage Black. Remember, Europe has the cup. They beat us badly in Italy 2 years ago. They're plus +1.50 to win it for a tie. And then Europe would still regain the cup based on that tie. It's 12-1. You're going to see Tommy Fleetwood in singles on Sunday. There's no hiding. Everybody plays in Sunday singles, right? I'm looking at that and going, how do you bet Tommy? I don't even know what the number is. We don't know who the matchup is. How do you bet Tommy Fleetwood in a singles match on a Sunday? There's a betting angle to this thing. If we just feel like Tommy Fleetwood is not going to be able to hold up to this back in the United States, in New York, at Bethpage Black. To your points about the Ryder Cup, we have not had a playing captain since 1962. That'd be some guy named Arnold Palmer that did that back in 1962. Keegan said yesterday after the round, he did not want to do this. He was like, I'm good with being captain, kind of reserved himself to this is where he's going to be. He's seventh in the world right now. He's going to go up after this win too. He's had three top 10 finishes in his last four starts. The one that he didn't was the U.S. Open, where he made the cut and finished 33rd. Pretty good showing, actually, at the U.S. Open for Keegs. So I think now, Jensen, it's almost a detriment to our team if he doesn't pick himself. He has to play. He's one of our best 12, and I don't think there's any debate about that, right?
Yeah, and again, you ask players, and I say this from the playing side, when you look at management and management's got to make decisions, you as a player, it's incumbent upon you to make it the most difficult in the very best possible way. I mean, do we live in a world, Dave, where Keegan says, yep, I'm going to play and maybe hand off the captain duties to a man named Eldrick Woods? Would that be just an incredible switcheroo that not only bolsters the red, white, and blue, but all of a sudden Captain America finds himself with a putt to win the Ryder Cup?
I will say this, and I floated that out there because I love that thought process. Keegs said he's going to be captain no matter what. I was like, oh, Keegs, give it to Tiger. That would have been perfect. We're back talking baseball next here at VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis. Going to have Greg Peterson join us here in just a second. But again, if you want to bet the ponies as well, not just Major League Baseball here, and certainly as we get ready for football season with college and the NFL straight ahead, our friends over at First Bet, they got you covered. Right now, when you sign up, new users get a $200 sign-up bonus. All you got to do is use the promo code VSiN200. Best tracks in the country, dare I say the world. So sign up now. $200 sign-up bonus when you use the promo code VSiN200 over our friends at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Without further ado, let's bring him in. The man that never sleeps, and it's to your benefit, everybody out there. Greg Peterson, give him a follow at GUnit_91. Joins us here now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Greg, let's get to our Major League Baseball. By the way, I did get that right? It's 91, is that right? 81.
At GUnit_81.
81. Let me ask, why the 81? Did we ever figure out the reason for the 81?
Oh, a very clear reason. Anquan Boldin is the toughest wide receiver I have ever seen. Played a full season on a broken face and was still a Pro Bowl starter that year for the Arizona Cardinals. My favorite player of all time. That is the 81, and well, I need a number because G-Unit was already taken, and that was my bowling nickname when I set this up in college.
GUnit_81. I had no idea it was for Anquan Boldin. But what a great reason, as you mentioned, to play with a broken face. Kids Look it up. That is all, in fact, fact. All right, let's get to it. The card today on Major League Baseball Monday. Greg, what are you attacking? And do we start with the Yankees on the road against the Cincinnati Reds?
Well, we're doing some whining and dining. Alan Winans on the bump for the New York Yankees. How about a 0.90 ERA at the minor league level? One home run allowed in 50 innings. Now, for Winans, if you look at the appearances he made for the Atlanta Braves the last two seasons, not great. 7.20 ERA. Man, he looks like a different pitcher, though. This guy is so much more qualified to be a starter than Will Ward right now in that rotation, and he goes up against the Cincinnati Reds team, where I just don't really feel confident in anyone other than Ellie De La Cruz in that lineup right now. Like, TJ Friedel is being able to move line. Kevin Lux says as well. We all know what the aforementioned De La Cruz is able to do, but I mean, past that, it's relatively rough. And for the New York Yankees, it's a revamped bullpen because now you've got Luke Weaver back in the fold. He returns after he was on the injured list for quite some time. Yuri De Los Santos, Tim Mill, these guys are mixing and matching. And for the Reds, bottom half of the big league team in terms of bullpen ERA, Nick Lodolo, the starter on the flip side for the Reds, down to about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings. That's a career low for him. And I have a feeling that Winans outduels Nick Lodolo. The bullpen is better. The lineup, I know that it's been less than great for the Yankees. 4 runs or fewer in 8 out of their last 9 games. That puts me on the under, but I still believe it's better than the Reds. Give me the money line of the Yankees and the under.
All right, Greg, while you're whining and dining, our man Dave Ross is going to hope that the Mets, his home Mets, do not keep getting burned. Ah. They might be coming up into an intriguing scheduling spot here against the Atlanta Braves. Spencer Schwellenbach, who's been arguably the best starter for Atlanta the entire season, he gets the ball for the Braves. Handicap this one for us. Do you like the road team here headed into Citi Field?
Yep, and they're not going to get burned. They're going to get blackburned because you've got Paul Blackburn on the bump for the New York Mets, and he has not been great throughout his career, and he's been even more not great this year. How about a 6.92 ERA across 2 starts and 2 long relief appearances? And let's call it what it is. I mean, are we expecting great things out of Paul Blackburn? A career 4.91 ERA. And part of that was when he was giving half of his starts out of the year in Oakland, where it's about as pitcher-friendly as it gets. Like, this guy has just never really been that great. And now you've got a team that's coming off of Sunday Night Baseball, albeit they go from road to home, so it's not like they had massive travel, but they still had to travel after Sunday Night Baseball. And you've got a guy in Spencer Schwellenbach who's been rock solid this year. About a 3.26 ERA, 3.33 fielding independent, giving up a little bit over a homer, 2 walks per 9 innings. Recognize it's been a less than savory bullpen for the Atlanta Braves, but the likes of Dylan Lee and company have come along. They really need Rossy Iglesias to come along as well, man. But that offense that has been right around league average in terms of runs per game, massive jolt ever since Ronald Acuna Jr. has gotten into the fold as well for the Atlanta Braves. I do believe that they should be a little bit of a bigger favorite here than like -120, -125. So I'm willing to roll with that. And I do think that we get a little bit black burnt with regards to total as well. Semi total at 8.5. I like the over.
In my group text, which is called Meet the Mets instead of the Mets, I got a lot of June swoon yesterday as the Mets are now out of first place with the Phillies having that one game lead. But we'll leave it there for now, Greg. Oh, let's talk about those D-backs. They're going to be in the south side of Chicago today, taking on the White Sox here. Do you like Arizona to get on the good foot at Guaranteed Rate Field?
Oh, absolutely, because Eduardo Rodriguez, he has been rocking and rolling recently. He has a, for the season, relatively rough 5.94 ERA. He's been giving up north of a home run and a half per 9 innings, north of 3 walks per 9 innings. But you look at what he's done ever since he's come off the injury list. He has given up 1 or 2 runs in each out of his last 3 starts, and he's backed up by one of the most fearsome lineups in all of baseball for the Diamondbacks, and Eugenio Suarez, up to 25 home runs. Ketel Marte, it's a Marte Parte when he's been able to do a 400 on base. And for the Chicago White Sox, not so much a party at the plate for them. They have been in the bottom 4 in the big leagues in terms of runs per game. Other than Miguel Vargas, nobody's really giving you north of 8 home runs. Have a few guys ready to move line, but not really a lot there. And Luis Robert continues to hit below the Bidot sign of 200. I just have a belief that sometimes when you're on a bad team, the stink seeps into you. Oh. I think that the stink has seeped into him. And for the White Sox, Shane Smith has not let that stink seep into him. He has been very good. 2.85 ERA. He does give up a few more walks than what you'd like with a little bit over three walks per nine innings, but strikeout numbers are there. He's not allowing the deep ball. He has been rock solid in Chicago all season long. Seeing that total between 8.5 and 9, I like the under to go along with that Diamondbacks money line.
All right, Greg, we're almost to the halfway point for most teams as far as 82 games played, and I did not have my bingo card this year that the St. Louis Cardinals would still be in contention, not only for a playoff spot, but for the Central Division at this point. Yet, they have a pretty consequential series getting underway at Busch Stadium tonight. They will face the Central leading Chicago Cubs. Really good pitching matchup tonight as well, as you'll get Ben Brown for Chicago, Matthew Libertor, who's been one of the best starters for the Cardinals in their rotation. Pretty evenly matched as far as the money line. Slight favorite here to the home team. Size it up for us. How do you like not only this one playing out, but maybe an overlook for this series as well?
And I do think that for the series, this could be a valuable one for the St. Louis Cardinals, because I think that they get going here in game number one, because I love Matthew Libertor. What he's been able to provide for the team has been consistency in terms of not beating himself. He's giving up less than a home run per nine innings, 1.3 walks per nine innings as well. Now, he has given up 4-plus runs in 3 out of his last 4 starts. That's been a little bit less than tremendous, but I do think that he's going to be able to find it here. And I really do like this under as well, because for this Chicago Cubs team, they played in a hitter's environment that is just second to none over the weekend. Like, we saw totals of 10.5, 11.5, and 12.5 at Wrigley Field over. And you didn't have to sweat any of those overs. I mean, it just kept flying over. Now you have to go to St. Louis, where, I mean, it's a little bit warmer than it normally is over there, but it's not like bandbox environments or like a PCL leg like you were seeing in Wrigley Field over the weekend. And for Ben Brown, I do think that there's some positivity doing for him as well. 5.56 ERA, feeling Bennett darn near 2 points lower. Only allows about 1 home run per nine innings. He's getting in that neighborhood of 11 strikeouts per nine, so I think that he improves. But I do think that in the end, Libertor finds a way to get the job done for the Cardinals. And the Chicago Cubs, number one in terms of bullpen ERA since May 1st, entering into Sunday. I do think that that regression continues just a little bit here. So I do like the under in the spot of 9. I do like the Cardinals on the money line.
One more very quickly to get through our Monday card here. Sox, you like them today, and maybe to get the bats going as well. The other Sox, not the White Sox in Chicago, but the Red Sox potentially today out here out west against the Anaheim Angels.
Well, I do like this one, even though Bueller, they have been calling his name to be able to show up, and he really hasn't thus far this season. Talk about a 5.95 ERA, north of 1.8 home runs per nine innings. It's not great, but guess what? Jack Kochanowicz, not any better. North of a 5 ERA himself, giving up north of home run and a half per nine innings. 4 walks per nine innings, and he's been only getting about 6 strikeouts per nine. Recognize that you have no more Rafael Devers for this Red Sox team, but I absolutely love what this team has been bringing with regards to their bullpen as well. This total of 9, I'd like it over. I think that both of these starters really give it up. And for the Red Sox, I think that they are starting to find their sea legs without Rafael Devers. Give me the money line of the Sox.
The Anquan Boldin of the network. There he is, everybody. The one and only Greg Peterson. Give a follow on XGUnit_81. Greg, appreciate the insight as always, my friend. And everybody out there, check out Sharp Plays if you haven't done so as of yet. At sharpplays.com, you're going to get unmatched transparency, records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info, alerts directly from the pros. We're going to deliver that to you right via email and or X. They've been around since 2011. They've been around the block here. Sharpplays.com. Trusted by the pros. Watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. A massive fight card coming up this weekend. We'll break it down next year. Beaten by the books.
By the books, right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Monday. UFC has been all over the map, Jensen. Azerbaijan this past weekend. They were down in Atlanta the week before. They're coming back to Vegas this weekend for UFC 317. So it is this card, Jensen, and we're going to talk a lot about it as the week goes. It is literally packed pillar to post. Prelim, main card, champions all over the place. It is just littered with talent everywhere. And this is what they do, right? When you get to the summer, and they every year, whatever that International Fight Week is, which is going to be this week, we're going to have people inducted into the Hall of Fame out here in Vegas. Just driving in this morning, Jensen, I'm looking at the other casinos as I'm driving through, and I'm seeing UFC up on the billboards. I'm seeing Hall of Fame weekend, all that stuff. So it's going to be a big weekend here for Vegas. And they're doing it right by this card. And obviously, main event here, Charles Oliveira, Ilya Topuria for the lightweight title. Two title bouts here. Alexandre Pantoja, Kaikar France in the flyweight belt there. And you can make a case that Brandon Royval, Joshua Van, that's going to be for the winner of Pantoja, Kaikar France. Could be an elimination type bout. So, Jensen, they're doing it right. It's going to be a massive weekend here in Las Vegas.
It is. I know you have some things you want to get off your chest.
Yes.
About what happened in the early hours Eastern time of Azerbaijan. Let me get your thoughts on do we have an overrated feeling? What are the highlights that you take away, my friend?
Well, they call them sweet dreams. Sweet dreams to my Jamal Hill bets over the weekend. Again, we talked about it this time last week that if you like the Hillside, get it now because he was plus $1.25. We locked that in early in the week. And we win the closing line value because he closes $1.15 favorite and then does not. We do the work there. Jamal Hill did not put in the work against in Azerbaijan against Khalil Roundtree. He loses 50-45 on the judges' scorecards every round in a five-round bout. And look, I don't want to bang the guy too badly. It looks like he might be damaged goods ever since that leg injury. Remember, he came back early when he was still champion to fight Alex Pereira and headline that card. And I was all over Pereira that night in one of the best, easiest wagers of all time. And then coming back against Prochazka, and again, being a favorite against Prochazka, I was like, what am I missing here? Prochazka gets the KO of Jamal Hill. This time around, it looked like a guy that, you know, we talk about it in Top Gun terms all the time. It looked like he didn't want to engage. And with a fighter that's supposed to be tailor-made to be in front of you for 25 minutes, with your power, sweet dreams, he was the only one that might have put his career to rest. I don't know what's next for Jamal Hill, but if that's the best that he has to offer, those championship days for a guy like Jamal Hill feel like they are way in the rearview mirror. Rafael Fiziev came through for me against Ignacio Bahamondes in the co-main event as a plus dog, so that mitigated some of those losses. But, you know, it's what we do, Jensen, and it's frustrating to see a lackluster performance when we felt like we're handicapping this thing the right way, getting the better number here on a Monday, and we're going to try to do that exercise again today. And then the fighter, you know, maybe it is. It's Azerbaijan. You're an American fighter. You're fighting. Your body clock's way off. But I don't know what the excuse would be when Khalil Roundtree had to do the same thing. Kudos to Khalil. Did what he had to do. But certainly Jamal Hill, not the best look. And, oh, by the way, John Jones, he gone. Retires as a heavyweight champion. Is he the GOAT? I think he is, for what we saw, greatest of all time. But he has now said he's going to retire, not fight Tom Aspinall. So Tom Aspinall, get rid of that interim tag. He is now the heavyweight champion of the world. And Aspinall, Jensen, to his point, says, which is a shot at John Jones, I will be an active heavyweight champion. So I know he's itching to get back in the octagon. But it is odd that fight's never going to take place, at least now for today. It's never going to take place. It doesn't, to me, detract from what John Jones has accomplished as the GOAT, but it did seem like a fight he just did not want to have happen, and now it looks like it's not going to happen.
Yep, totally agree. And again, when the body of work says what it says, and just the fear, when you say his name, the fear that is struck within any contender, anyone who has stepped into the octagon against him, I think that's all you need. Speaking of, is a transition of power, if mm-hmm. you will, in the heavyweight. The vacant lightweight title, right, is the top of this main event,
yep.
and a dueling main event. As we look at Topuria, and I'll read you my notes. Tell me if I'm on here with
Bring
this
it.
Matchup. So we know that the knockout power has been there for Topuria, of course, undefeated and the former featherweight champion. And he vacated his title right to get into the lightweight division.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Oliveira, the high finish rate, a submission king. That was what I kind of underlined. You know me, I'm a method of victory guy, too. Love to look at those markets. You said something in the break that I think it bears repeating for people that are just joining us. This number screams maybe a little bit too much
yes.
to put Topuria not only as this big of a favorite, but maybe a red flag going up for anyone that wants to add Topuria to a potential parlay. I wrote down submission ability for Oliveira as one where if you like the dog and you wanna have a little flair for the dramatic here, that potentially the method of victory if Oliveira pulls off the upset.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. But what we're talking about here is if you know, a lot of people are going to blindly, if you're new to MMA betting, throw Topuria in. He's a $4 betting favorite. How can he lose? I'll put him in there as one of my anchors for parlays. Be very careful of that against a guy like DuBronx and Charles Oliveira because you're right, Jensen. This guy, if the fight goes down to the ground, look out. This is where he excels. Now, there's two trains of thought here. One, remember, Oliveira, and I'll try to see if I can get Ricardo Lamas on. He's a very busy man these days back in Chicago. Ricardo Lamas is the last man to beat DuBronx at 145 pounds. And the reason why I bring that up is Charles then went up to 55, and he got bigger. He filled out his body, and this is clearly his home. He's been one of the best lightweight champions that we've seen. Topuria is leaving 145 and going up to 55, and it doesn't look the same. He looks a little bit smaller at 55, whereas DuBronx actually looked like this was the right weight class. He was killing himself to make 145, couldn't do it anymore years ago, and that's now why he's thrived here at 155 pounds. So my concern is you're going to be betting. By the way, here at Circa, Jensen, behind me, Topuria is almost a $5 betting favorite over DuBronx. You can get Charles Oliveira here at Circa at plus 385. You can get him right now at DraftKings at plus 320. You shop around, you're almost getting a dollar value depending on the book. Mm. So that is going to be exercise in and of itself depending on which side you like this week. So your point about Oliveira on the ground, does he want to strike with Topuria? Well, remember this. Everybody said, well, you don't want to strike with Michael Chandler, right? And yeah, Charles Oliveira got hurt by Michael Chandler in that fight. Then what did Oliveira do? Hit him with one of the best left hooks you're going to see and drops Chandler and goes in and gets the stoppage, right? So his power, Charles has got a couple of ways that he can beat him. So does he want to fight fire with Ilya Topuria? Probably not. I think it would be more advantageous to pull guard, try to get this down there, use that BJJ that he's so fantastic at, and see if he can put Topuria out of there. That's the best method of victory. But the other thing will be the totals. And they're starting to populate, not for all the fights, but they have populated for this fight. And what we're going to get at here is, can you drag Topuria deep into the waters? If you can do that in Charles Oliveira, I think that's going to help you for a guy moving up in weight here. And right now, how about this? The total for a 5-round main event, Jensen, is 1.5. Now it's juiced.
My goodness.
How about that? So it's juiced to the over at $1.45. But the under is plus money at plus $1.15. Correlated play, it feels like to me. If you like Topuria, yep, you should be looking at that under, and maybe that's the best way to play it. Instead of laying $4 on Ilya Topuria or almost $5 here at Circa, you would play the under at plus money at plus $1.14 because the handicap is telling you, the numbers are telling you, Topuria is going to get Oliveira out of there quickly. That's mm-hmm. what this is telling you. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to tell you, if you like DuBronx, you can sprinkle some on that plus money at almost 4-1 here at Circa and look to the over at $1.45. Those would be the leans on a Monday, Jensen, because you want to take the smaller guy, new to the yep. division, and yes, mm-hmm. he starts Max Holloway. I get that. Different level here at 155 pounds. That's the way I would look at this handicap here on a Monday.
I love it. I know we're going to break down because of obviously just the heavy title fights at the top of this card throughout the week. But I am very intrigued to see, and the great Lou Finicaro always tells us as this week goes on, you've been so good about the early odds and mm-hmm. seeing it. I can't, if the public just piles on, boy, what do you think that price for Oliveira ends up being by the time we get to weigh-ins on Friday? It could be unbelievably juicy.
And then that would be interesting because this is where the betting splits will really come into play, too. I would think that a lot of public money would come in on DuBronx, as popular a fighter as he yep. is. But the number stays up. That's telling you the sharp money still might be coming in at Topuria. I just think there's a danger in laying that price point here on a Monday. And again, Pantoja is a $2.70 betting favorite against Kai Car of France. That's the other title bout as well. Roy Vall, a small favorite against Joshua Van. Money Moicano back in here against Benir Dariush. Peyton Talbot against Felipe Lima. What a great main card. Much more to get to. Just getting it started. Hour two, straight ahead.